All right. Good evening, everybody. We are back for our last of the pre-Pesach Rav Dessler Psychology Shiurim. This will be our last shiur until after Pesach. After Pesach, be on the lookout for our next topic. I figure next Tuesday night is already Bidikas Chametz night, where many spend the night with a candle and a feather, and many others spend the time in the airport or on the plane off to very exotic locations. Please have me in mind. I'd love to be thought of when you're experiencing any of those exotic vacations. I always wished, you know, they always say that rabbis sometimes have transformative experiences on planes next to someone that they're makarev or next to, I don't know, a priest that they debate. I never had an experience like that. I was always looking for my plane story. My favorite plane story, not about me, but they tell a story about a rabbi who finds himself on a plane next to a priest. And the rabbi just wants to learn and do his own thing. He opens up his Gemara and he's studying. And the priest next to him has a lot of questions. What are you studying? The rabbi's trying to give him one-word answer, doesn't really want to get involved. And the priest says, no, come on, I'm very knowledgeable. In fact, I bet I'm more knowledgeable than you. And the rabbi's not so interested. And the priest is going on and on. He says, you know, I bet my knowledge of the Old Testament is far superior than even yours. And the rabbi's like, okay, that's fine, I don't really care. And the priest says, no, like, what if we had a debate? What if we had like a trivia game even to figure out whose knowledge is greater? And the rabbi's like, I'm not so interested. And the priest says, what if we made it really interesting? Every question, Rabbi, that you ask me that I can't answer, I'll pay you $100. On the other side, a question that I ask you that you can't answer, you just pay me $5. Rabbi says, okay, fine. So the priest says, Rabbi, you're up first. Ask me anything. So the rabbi says, all right, which figure in the Old Testament was 6'5", Asian, and loved to eat hot dogs? So the priest is thinking, and he's thinking, and he's thinking, and he's thinking more and more and more. And finally he says, nah, I don't know, I give up. And he hands the rabbi $100. And he says, so Rabbi, what's the answer? Rabbi shrugs and hands him back $5. We talked last week about asking questions, knowing what questions to ask, what questions not to ask, and the ways in which the Rasha's questions, quote unquote, may not actually be questions. Tonight, we're going to continue on in the Rav Dessler Haggadah, a beautiful couple of passages from the Rav Dessler Haggadah, to continue on that discussion about the power of questions, why Chazal use it so much, and the power, we're going to talk about experiential learning. The tools Chazal gave us, not only to understand Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Haggadah, but really about Jewish knowledge, A to Z, the tools that Chazal taught us how to teach. I'm going to share my screen. And away we go. Everyone see this? This is his comment on Manushana, and then we're going to jump ahead to his comment on Yachal Mirosh Chodesh. I'm going to zoom in a little bit more. Okay, so Manushana, the questions. A lot of questions. Pesach, I mentioned last week from my father, Pesach is the holiday of questions. So where it says Manushana on the bottom of the page. Rav Dessler says, again, this is a Haggadah by Rav Dessler's Talmidim, who took excerpts from his other writings and put it together on the Haggadah. So Rav Dessler writes, Haggadah shel Pesach nisyasta al pi gedolei chachmei HaTorah. The Haggadah shel Pesach was established and formed by great Jewish people. According to many, it was established maybe in the times of the Tanayim, many, many years ago. It's undergone some revisions over the years, not in a reform way. But it's gotten some updates and some passages were added later in time. But the Haggadah goes way back. We're really getting Chazal's interpretation of how to fulfill Kidei Shenucha Lekayim Ba Mitzvahs V'Higadat Levincha. The Torah gives a mitzvah from Parshas Bo, counted by the Rambam and the Sefer Achinach as a formal mitzvah. V'Higadat Levincha B'Yamahu Le'mor Bavur Zeb. There's a mitzvah to explain to the children to understand all the important Jewish lessons and values that were carried out by HaKadosh Baruch Hu during Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, the Torah doesn't tell us exactly how one is supposed to fulfill that mitzvah. It leaves it up to every parent, every father and child tandem, to find a way to ask questions and get answers. But Chazal gave us a Haggadah to help us maximize this mitzvah of how to tell over the story and how to impart our most fundamental values. V'lachein efshar lomod mimena, by examining the way in which the Haggadah wants us or advises us to fulfill this mitzvah of education, we can learn from it as darkei ha'ora li'aladim v'chinucham. Torah is giving us expert opinion on how we are supposed to educate our children. Dugma. One example we're going to discuss tonight. We're going to discuss two main examples. One example of how we should teach. These are pedagogical. Is that right? Pedagogical techniques. The Haggadah makes great use of the question-answer format. More important than the question-answer format is the actions that we do to elicit questions from the children on their own. We don't hand them index cards and say, psst, ask this question now. Or give them a script where it says, child asks this, parent asks this. We actually do things. We're in quotes, kidei sheyish alu atinokos. There are so many things that Chazal say we do on Seder nights, and the reason given is, so the kids will ask. I gathered a couple of examples on my sheet over here. Each of the following minhagim also have other reasons why we do them. But at least one approach given in Chazal or the Rishonim or Achronim for why we do the following things is, so the kids will ask. Why is there a minhag by many to wear a kittel at the Seder? There's important reasons about that. One reason is, so the kids will ask, hey, why are you wearing that? I remember my niece, my oldest niece, when she was very young, my brother came to the Seder wearing a kittel. And she didn't just ask, she freaked out. She's like, why are you wearing that? He's like, great, you asked the question. She's like, no, seriously, take it off. Why are you wearing that? It's so scary. And she was like screaming, and she wouldn't let him wear it. So one reason given is, so the kids will ask, they'll notice something is weird, something is different, and she was really weirded out. The minhag to dip, one of the questions from the Manush Sana is, why are we dipping tonight? There are other reasons for dipping. One reason given is, because it's weird. And they're going to ask, hey, why are we dipping? Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara, there's a minhag to give out candies. Well, in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, it was klayos ve'agozim, it was nuts and kernels, which isn't so exciting to our kids, but at the time it was, wow, you know, nuts and kernels. So one reason given is, so the kids will ask. There's other reasons given to keep the kids awake. One reason is, it's weird. Hey, why are we getting candies tonight? There is a minhag, the Mishnah quotes, to take the Seder plate off the table. Either to cover the Seder plate or move it to the other side of the table. There's other reasons why we do that. One of the reasons is, so the kids should ask. The approach given that, so the kids will ask for the kittel and the dipping, what's the actual answer then? If there's really a reason, just tell them the reason. And if it's to get the kids to ask, why? Why is it important that the kids ask these questions? And the answer is, we want the kids to be in question mode. If the kids are in question mode, people are wearing funny costumes, people are doing strange things, people are saying strange things, people are behaving in ways we don't normally behave, why are we laying down? There's another reason why we lay down. But also, the kids are supposed to ask, why are we doing this? We want to not just give the kids the script, hey, ask this question. We could just teach them. But we want to do a derech she'elo tshuva. We could give them the script, ask this question. But we don't just do a question-answer format. We try to elicit from the child to ask on their own. And to prime the child to ask on their own, we start doing weird things that maybe just for the reason of getting the kids to ask, aside from any reason to do it, just to get the kids in question mode. Maybe if they notice this, they'll ask about the matzah and the mar, and we say, aha, now we're getting to the meat and potatoes. Now we're getting to the real core of what tonight is about. The matzah and the quickness of leaving Mitzrayim, the mar and the bitterness, the zroa and the carbon pesach, the tears and the bricks and the mortar. That's the story we want to tell. But we want to pique their curiosity. And it's not just a matter of telling the kids, okay, we did it so you'll ask. And they say, okay, so I'm asking. And they say, no, so you'll ask. We have to kind of reinforce the kids' questioning by saying, great question. And if we have an answer, we wear a kittel maybe to keep ourselves in check and not get carried away. We dip maybe as a sign of cheres. We give out candies to keep the kids awake. We take the Seder plate off the table maybe to show that we are not able to eat until we finish the mitzvah of telling the story. There's a reason for each one of those things. But again, the more important than any particular detail of tonight is to get the kids asking. Now, why is that so important? We're going to jump for a second to page 79, just meaning page 2 in the booklet. On the bottom of the page, we'll go back to the top in a second. The bottom of the page is not a quote from Rav Dessler, but the author put this together, quoting from the Alter of Kelm. The Alter of Kelm, mentioned in the past, was one of Rav Dessler's biological relatives, I think his great-grandfather maybe, but also the founder of his way of thinking. His father studied in Kelm, and this is what he says on the bottom paragraph of page Ayin Tes. The Alter of Kelm says the following. on the second line. The Gemara says, Choten matzah b'leili p'sachim. We're supposed to grab the matzah. What does it mean, grab the matzah on Pesach night? Pirish Rashbam, it's Rashi's grandson, the Rashbam. Magbiyin haka'ara k'dei sheyiru hatinokos v'yishalu. We pick up the Seder plate, we pick up the matzahs, and we shake them around. Some point out that this idea of grabbing the matzos may be the idea of stealing the afikomen. It's the exact same idea. We want to pique the kids' curiosity. We want to keep them engaged. The author of Kelm says something amazing. Misha rotzed l'kayma Torah kipashto, ein lo mizeh rak mitzvah achas. You want to read this line literally as a purely Pesach or purely Pesach night instruction. It's telling you one thing to do. On Pesach night, pick up the Seder plate. On Pesach night, move the ka'ara. On Pesach night, grab the matzos, have them thrown around. It's a very specific task for a one-time mitzvah. Aval al derech hasachalas chachmas hamusar. Derech haskalas chachmas hamusar. One who really wants to understand deeply. Harbe amal yagiyalom me'ema hadzvarim hama'atim. We can learn so much depth from this one example. Lama lanu sheyish'alu. Why is it so important that we're doing all these things? Getting the kids to ask. Doing weird things to pique their interest. Halo yasapra liyatsiyas mitzrayim. Why don't we just tell them the story? If it's so important for us to teach or pass on the lesson, then just tell them the lesson. Tell them the story. Ela she'ein oneg ba rak achari etzar. No pain, no gain. Or in his language, there is no relief unless there's first some distress. Hasha'ela hu kimo tzar. Beautiful perspective. A question is a type of discomfort. A question is a type of something isn't right. The world doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand. There's a feeling of a need to know. Ki chafetzal ladas mazos. I need to know, what is this thing? I don't know what it is. Or why are we doing this? Or how does this make sense? Explain these numbers to me. The kasher yeshivu lo b'tam, when a person gets an answer to something that's bothering them, yisyashiv alibo yoser v'yasa roshem bo. When a difficulty is resolved, when a challenge is solved, when something bothersome is put at rest, it makes a greater impact. The person says, what did I think originally? And what new information have I gotten now to reconcile or make sense of it? There's a great pedagogical tool here that more than we can impart to a child by telling them, if you arouse a burning question inside of them, then something isn't right. And then you don't have to force them to take the answer. They want to know the answer. They're so curious. They're so unsettled by the fact that something doesn't make sense. They will ask again and again until they get an answer. I know my kids do. When they want to know something, something doesn't make sense. Why are we doing it this way? Why are we going here? Why aren't we going there now? Why are we? They ask again and again and again. And if I say, just, it's fine because I said so, they want to know more. They want to know more. When we call shekein la'atzmo, dafka b'esyashvas el halev. And even for ourselves, if we don't just study, but we actually raise questions to get ourselves to think. V'harbe iyon v'harbe zichuch ha'machshava. We constantly refine our way of thinking. Challenge ourselves to say, this is not right. I don't understand this fully. I have questions. Not to push the questions aside, but to actually hone in on the questions. Spend some time making it not make sense. Spend some time raising that curiosity and that suspense. So the child wants to know. It's a good tactic for drushas. Person could just get up there and teach and just give over an idea. But it's a pretty classic tactic for a rabbi to ask a question or two questions or three questions in starting out a drusha. The hope is to ask the kinds of questions that get the audience burning to hear an answer. And any more than it would be meaningful to just tell them the Musar Vor, to tell them the Pshat and the Pasuk on the Drasha of the week, but get them to really think and say, yeah, that does bother me now. I didn't notice it before, but now that you pointed it out, I need to get an answer to that question. Advertisers do this all the time. TV shows, movies, dramas, mystery novels. People are interested in continuing on if they can catch your interest. So the infomercial doesn't start out with, buy this mattress. It starts out with, are you experiencing back pain? Or would you like to find a way to sleep better? Or someone's like, yeah, I'd love to find a way to sleep better. I need to know more about this. I have to keep watching this terribly cheesy infomercial. I have to continue to make it through the TV show or the movie or the mystery novel to find out who killed Mr. Body. It's a Clue reference for those who don't remember. I need to know. I need to find out the answer. I'm so curious. Questions or suspense. Or these, I'm thinking of game shows. And the answer is gonna be answered after this break. Like, they want to build suspense because if people are piqued and they're curious, they want to come back for more. That's level one. Level two, and this is the nuance of the Pesach Seder, it's not just about asking questions, piquing curiosity. It's getting the kids themselves to ask the questions, getting them in question mode. When you get someone to think of something on their own, it's much more meaningful and much more impactful and much more longer lasting than if you just tell them it. Even if you do a question and answer, if they're the ones who have to think of the question and maybe of the answer themselves, it's much more meaningful. You know, Dale Carnegie has some books where he teaches people how to trick other people. I mean, how to get along with other people and how to use social psychology mind games, how to convince people, how to win friends and influence people. One of the most successful books of all time. And one of the things that Dale Carnegie says, if you want to convince people of an idea, let them feel like it's their idea. Better than you can convince them that they should do what you want to do, what if you can arouse in them the desire and to come on their own to the conclusion that your idea is a really good idea? So you raise the questions, you point out the problems with the current system, and you make a couple of small little tweaks here and there, and eventually they say, hey, what if we just ordered that program? And you say, yeah, what a great idea. If you go to them and say, we should order this program for our company, they say, not interested. But if you get the CEO on his own to think that this is a good idea, then he thinks it's his own idea. I remember when I was teaching little children, but also older children, very often I would ask a question, whether it's Parsha related or Chag related or whatever it was. And I would ask the kids for their answers. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu say it this way? Why did Korach respond like that? How come on Pesach we do it this way? Why is Tisha B'Av celebrated or observed in this way? And they would have answers, really good answers. And I would say, excellent. And then I would supply some answers of my own or answers that I learned in Divrei Chazal or Svarim. And then we would review the next day. And I would ask them again, so, what did we say? Why did we do this? And you know what the kids answered? The same things they said the day before. The things that I told them afterward weren't as memorable. They always remember the ideas that they on their own came up with. If what's in the language of social psychologists and educational experts is student-generated questions or student-generated ideas. So one superintendent once told me, the one who is doing the talking is doing the learning. The one who is doing the talking is doing the learning. If the teacher in the class is doing all the talking, then the teacher is doing a lot of learning. And the kids aren't doing a lot of learning. The goal for the teacher is to get the kids to ask questions, to raise discussion so the kids could have solutions or ideas. That's what they're going to remember. Hopefully in this year, you won't just let me talk. You'll be able to throw out ideas. Otherwise, the one who's doing the talking is doing the learning. We need to hear from everybody, so everyone is the ones doing the learning. There are a lot of studies about student-generated questions and student-generated learning. One of my favorites is a study from 2020. Psychologists took undergraduate studies in psychology courses, and they had them study for psychology tests. This is what psychology does. They give their own students in the psychology courses the benefit of being in the psychology experiments to find out who does better on tests. So the ones who lose out, sorry, tough for you, part of being a psychology student. So some psychology students, they had them prepare for a psychology test the way that most students prepare for a test, by rereading the chapter or rereading their notes, restudying, reading it again. You read it once, now read it again. They highlight what they're reading. They make note cards and flashcards about the things they've already studied. They make summary bullet points, that which they already know. To a second group of students, they asked them to take practice tests that the teachers made up. And they said, don't study by rereading the same material again. You've already read the chapter once, don't read the chapter another time. Don't read over your notes from class, the PowerPoints, don't look that over. Take these practice tests and just answer questions again and again and again, and then take the actual test. And those who were answering questions as a way of studying did significantly better, like at least 14 points on average higher on a 100-point test. 14 points higher than those who studied by restudying over and over again. But there was a third group who did even better. Not just studying by restudying their notes, and not just studying by taking practice questions and answers, but they asked the students to make up their own questions. They said, what if you were teaching this to a high school student? Take the material and you generate questions from this material that you think would really test their knowledge. And the students who studied, not by reading it again, not only by answering questions, but by creating their own questions from the material, that itself was the greatest form of learning. They were the ones who had to understand it well enough to be able to create meaningful questions from the material, and that stuck with them. They're the ones who thought of the questions. They're the ones who made it real. They're the ones who not only were even better at giving spitback information, but they obviously were better at what's called transferable knowledge, which means extracting from this information to questions you didn't exactly learn before, but can you extrapolate? Can you use critical thinking to take the material given and apply it to situations you were never given? Those who studied just the same material over and over again obviously were terrible at that, relative to those who had to understand the material well enough to teach it in a way by being the ones to create the questions. Unfortunately, surveys show that most college students continue to study by restudying. They read the chapter again, they read their notes again, they go over the PowerPoint again, they highlight their things again, they listen to the lectures again, on double speed or whatever. But they're restudying. They're again learning the material by hearing it again from someone else, or reading it again from someone else, or hearing it from themselves from their own notes. What if we can get students to study better? What if we can train ourselves, children or adults? Pesach isn't only for the kids, it's for the adults too. We all have to learn the story of the Haggadah. We're all supposed to do a Derech She'ela U'Tshuva. We're all supposed to be able to generate our own questions and curiosities in a way that makes the material more meaningful. So one of the articles I was reading had a couple of good suggestions for teachers, really all educators, about how to get people to learn by asking their own questions. One idea was to teach students what it means to ask a good question. A good question is not one where it's a what question. What is the date of, you know, the War of 1812? I don't know, it's a great question, right? Or different questions of yes or no type questions. Teach students to ask why questions. Teach students to ask explain questions. Teach students to ask discuss questions. Discuss two ways in which, explain the meaning behind. You want to give students a way to think and teach them to ask those kinds of questions. Another great one out there, especially for those who love game shows, is to teach students to play Jeopardy with this information. You know Jeopardy? What is Jeopardy? Answer, Daily Double. No, what is Jeopardy, right? Jeopardy is a game where the answer is given, then the contestant has to ask the question. Teach students to learn material by playing Jeopardy. Take this information, three approaches to dissolving a solvent, I don't know, idea. I'm making stuff up, right? And teach them to ask a question, right? Give them the information and say, can you make a question out of this? Who studied this? Or who is this person? Or who is this, what is this place? Or what happened in this time period? Or what are two approaches to solving this problem? Additionally, teachers can encourage students to make up practice tests for each other and then have other students take those practice tests. More than it's meaningful for the other students to take the practice tests, the real studying is in making a practice test for someone else. The Gemara in Tainus in Daf Zayin has a quote, a pretty well-known quote. Some places it's from Rabbi Chanina, and some places it's from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Either way, the quote goes like this: Harbe lamadati mirabosai, I learned a lot from my teachers. Umechave rayos mirabosai, I learned more from my colleagues than from my teachers. Umitalmidai yosu mikulam, I learned most of all from my students. Why would a person learn more from their students than they do from their colleagues or from their teachers? Best answer is, when you teach, you have to know it so well to be able to give it over to someone else. You have to handle their questions. You have to think of it in ways that you could ask and test them on the material. The more you understand it enough to teach it to someone else or be able to ask questions about it, that's really where the learning happens. That's great for the teacher. But what about the students? What if we can apply the same aspect to the students? What if the students could become the teacher? The students could become able to ask questions and test themselves or other students. That's the best type of learning. It was studied by psychologists and discovered a couple of years ago, maybe a few decades ago, if you want to go far back to where it all began. Chazal knew this thousands of years ago. That's the Haggadah. The Haggadah is formed in question-answer format, but not just question-answer format, but in a self-generated type of question format to teach children to be curious, to ask questions. We do weird things just to get the kids to ask. Because if they're in asking mode, they're in learning mode. If they're the ones thinking of the questions, and then ask them, what do they think? Why do we do this? You know, sometimes we have such a good education system that some of the Seder night magic is lost. Because the kids practice this stuff already in school. They're not weirded out by the dipping, and they're not weirded out by the ka'ara, and they're not weirded out by the questions. They practice this weeks before, and it's great that we have excellent educational systems. But the idea is, do something over the top, do something a little bit weird at the Seder, to get the kids to ask. That is the first half, that is the first lesson for tonight. Rav Dessler is highlighting from the Haggadah, the pedagogical tool of not just questions and answers, but self-generating questions, teaching other people, whether it's children or adults, to ask the questions. That's going to be very meaningful. Before we go to example number two, what the Haggadah is using to teach us, I'm going to pause for questions. This is where the learning really happens. Don't let me do all the learning. Any questions, comments, thoughts? Yeah.
The only thing I can say is this is actually the first time I actually heard that the best way of doing well is actually making up your own questions and actually asking others. I never thought of that, never learned that technique at all in all the years of schooling that I had. And I recognize, and just imagine the fact that it must take an extraordinary amount of time, and the fact that you kind of have to learn the material that much better able to somehow formulate a question to ask somebody else. I mean, that's like really going above and beyond, more than the fact that it probably takes a lot more time. So when you say you're taking a test there, it's like you're formulating it on your own. When you end up taking a test, you know, that was done previously, whatever, everything's basically there and you're just doing a multiple choice question. Or maybe perhaps you're actually doing an essay, but I think most people are doing multiple choice questions.
Right.
But, first I heard, and obviously it would tend to make sense that a person would probably do better, but a person would have to invest that much more time, for sure.
I'll repeat it for those on Zoom, that it's pointed out that this was not just a novel idea, but it sounds like a very time-consuming idea, that studying in this way for children in school would probably take a lot of time. I'll say yes and no. Yes, it would take a lot of time. No, sometimes students spend hours and hours rereading their notes in ways that they think is helping them learn, but they're actually fooling themselves. They get to the test and they say, you know, I read something about this paragraph, but don't really know what it was. Whereas maybe not to have students create like a full multiple choice where they have to come up with three wrong answers and a right answer for each one, but just to teach them to ask questions. You know, maybe as time goes on, to streamline it or to learn to do it faster. But yeah, it probably would take longer in some sense, and it would probably be that much more meaningful. Even when students do well on tests by memorizing their notes, as soon as the test is over, how much do you recall from fifth grade geometry or high school calculus or college anything? How much of the information do you recall? So it would probably take longer, but what if it was more meaningful? What if it lasted longer? In the long term, time versus reward, it'd probably have a much more economical benefit if studying an extra few hours by asking questions actually made the material a lifelong knowledge. Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, at our Seders, I mean, the second night we have a mixed multitude. Uh-huh. Really know very little about Seder and questions and stuff. And I understand the part about, actually I've always been kind of a little bit upset about the fact that everything is geared towards the kids because, you know, you disorient them and it's kind of like a game. But really, everybody needs to learn from this.
Good. That's the next topic.
And you know, it seems to me that in order to get these people who are just like, their forks in their hands ready to eat.
Right.
To get them to start engaging is going to have to take some work on my part to kind of set the stage for asking these questions.
Right.
I mean, they're like, you know, they don't even know what question to ask.
Right.
You know, so it's, I find it a very frustrating situation.
Right.
And I'm not sure what to do about it. Other than,
I'll repeat it for those on Zoom because that's such a good point. Sometimes we're dealing with people at the Seder who are not children, who are adults who are not so educated in Jewish tradition, and they don't even know what to ask, and they're so hungry and interested. All right, it's 10 o'clock, it's time to eat.
This is the tradition. It's the Seder is the food.
Right.
And that's,
right.
And this is just something you have to do.
Right. So for them, they just have to get to the Seder in order to get to the food. So how do we get them to notice things are going on? So we'll talk about that in just a second. But the Haggadah talks about Eshe Eino Yodei Lishaal, which we picture in the Haggadah is a picture of like a little kid holding a blanket and a teddy bear who doesn't know how to ask. But the reality is, for an adult who wasn't educated in the traditional chinuch setting, they would probably be in the category of Sheina de Elisha. What Tagara says to do with individuals like that is at Pesachlo. You have to teach them. You have to either spark curiosity or try to, we'll talk about it in a second, the other aspect of the shir, about what it means to get people involved. But yeah, it's a tricky format to see, how do I not do too much or turn people off or keep people too hungry? How do I find a way to keep them engaged? Is there a question on Zoom?
Quick comment with respect to generating questions. One thing that was done when I was growing up at our Seder tables, what was done is the Haggadah, Magid, was divided up amongst all the participants, and then each person reads a paragraph, but the rule was is that you couldn't move on from your paragraph until you ended up asking a question.
Uh-huh. So that sounds like, first of all, an excellent tool for learning, and two, sounds like from very hungry people who might be there. But I think some mutinous participants, but I think from a learning perspective, that's amazing. So let's go to the second aspect and the second tool that we use. First tool is about questions and self-generated questions from kids and from adults, really. And the second aspect is about live demonstration, what we're going to call experiential learning. This is now to the top of page 79. Same page we were just on, but the top of the page. Rav Dasher says, V'chein, another teaching tool is Inyan HaMechasha, illustration, demonstration. We say matzah zo and we point, and we pick up the matzah. Mar zeh, pick up the mar. Tziurim chayim, we use living, live props, images. And Haggadah says, La'olam yira ki'ilu hu yatzim mitzrayim. B'chodar v'dor, each person's obligated to envision as if he or she themselves left Mitzrayim. Which again, the Rambam says at that point, you're supposed to take the matzah, put it on your shoulder, and walk around. And the Haggadah says, Ilu lo hotzianu, harianu v'aneinu, mishua badun lefarabu Mitzrayim. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu had not taken us out, we and our families would still be enslaved to Paro in Mitzrayim. This is a very important line in Avadim Hayinu to understand in depth another time. But the imagery of not just, hey, it once was long ago. It's, we could still see ourselves being mishubed, whether it means physically enslaved or indebted to him because eventually Paro would have let us go. Explanations abound, but there's some connection to us here, sitting here now, if it happened this way, and if it hadn't happened this way. V'derech Zohar of Dessler says, Einena rak b'shvil chinuch hayaladim. This is not just a teaching tool for the kids. Halo amru b'gemara shim ein lo ben o isha hu shoal yatzmo. If a person's having a seder in solo, in solitude, a person has to ask himself or herself the questions. Again, derech shein lo tshuva, but a person has to ask himself. Even two very knowledgeable people need to tell over the story by asking. How can the Haggadah be a set text for people of all different ages and all different educational backgrounds? What kind of nonsense is it to ask yourself? The purpose is not to know more. This is why it's going to be important for those who know a lot, for those who don't know a lot. The process is the same. They have the same matzah, the same props. There's no fancier matzahs for those who know more, no simpler matzahs for those who know less. It's the same process, the same text for those of all ages and of all educational backgrounds. And this is my favorite line, where it's double underlined. V'im amnam ha-seichel chacham hu. Even if the intellect is well-educated and wise, ha-lev hu ama aretz. The heart and the experience is ignorant. I'll read that again. It's a beautiful line. Even if the intellect is wise, the heart is a child. We could know something because we studied it. And because we've heard it 1,000 times before, we could know it. But do we feel it? Do we live it? Do we breathe it? Is it the kind of thing that we actually see and actually feel? Rabbi Saul Salanter was quoted as having said, the greatest distance in the universe is the gap between one's heart and one's head.
I used to daven with the Boston Rebbe, and he used to put a bucket of water, and he used to take a stick with a peckle on it.
Yeah.
And he was like acting like a slave crossing over the Red Sea. So, I mean, he really had to feel it. You know, that was the thing.
Beautiful. Yeah. I'm passing on. The Boston Rebbe used to demonstrate with water, with an actual package on the shoulder, crossing over the water. The idea is we have to make it real, regardless of how much information someone knows. How much do we actually feel? V'hashavas ha'emes el halev d'oreshes oso ha'lashon v'oso ha'signon mamish k'mo ha'lashon v'ha'signon behem mazbirim liyeled. The heart of a 2-year-old, of a 40-year-old, of a 97-year-old, of a 127-year-old. They're all the same. Just because a person may be older and more knowledgeable and wiser does not mean they have an easier time feeling something or living something. Each of us has a 3-year-old inside of us. There's a part of us that doesn't understand unless we've seen it ourselves, unless we've experienced it ourselves. And that's why, with something as important as Yetzias Mitzrayim, the fundamentals of our Emunah in Hashem and His Hashkacha in the world, it's not enough to talk about it. We have to live it. We have to experience it. We have to hands-on live and breathe it. If you go on page number 3, I fast-forwarded to the later in Magid, where we talk about Yachal Rosh Chodesh, on the 3rd page of your packet. Haggadah says, you might think we should start telling the story from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Talmud Lomar Bayamahu, only on the day itself. Ibayamahu Yachal Mibod Yom, maybe earlier in the day, Erev Pesach, like we're not busy enough. Erev Pesach, Talmud Lomar, Bavur Zeh Lo Amarti, Ela B'Shash Yesh Matzah Mar Munachim Lefanecha. Only when there's Matzah Mar on the table, then you can tell the story. Or Dessler says, along the lines of the previous discussion, there on page Sadiches, Seder Lel Pesach Yadua Shekulo Banui Al Yesod Echad. The whole purpose of the Seder is Lahamchish Es Nisa Yetzias Mitzrayim Al Yedei Tziurim Chayim. We have to have live demonstrations. He says, B'chol Yom Chayim Adam Lizkor Yetzias Mitzrayim. There is a mitzvah every single day, day and night, which we do in Kriyashma, morning and night, to remember intellectually the story of the Exodus. Avalo Pesach, tonight, on Seder night, there's a special mitzvah that's not fulfilled the entire year. Hachiev hu l'saper, to relive the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And first of all, the timing is so important. This night is mesugal, this night is auspicious for being able to reenact it because it's the night, in fact, where we were taken out, and the timing matters very much. It's a very important lesson in pedagogy, that the timing matters. On the next paragraph, and the Mishum Kach Anu Omrim, where it's underlined, you have to have matzah mar on the table. The imagery and the imagination are not complete. In terms of timing, we have to have what they had. They had matzah and mar. We have matzah and mar. And even if we don't have Karpin Pesach, we do our best to make an imitation, a zecher for the Karpin Pesach. K'al yedei kol harishamim yachad, notzeras shleimus hatzir, we can complete the picture if we have props, if we have the tools. If the timing is right, and the table is right, and the tools are right, v'az po'el b'yoser al halev, it actually has a real meaningful impact on the heart, le'orer es hargesh shel ki'ilu hu yatzami Mitzrayim. And he has a beautiful mashal from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter in the next paragraph on the bottom of the page. He says on the bottom of the page, "Hein ena seichel po'el el ha'adam kmo achush," that the intellect does not have the same effect as the physical senses. Ki ba'adam yesh hishtatfus shel guf v'nefesh. The person is comprised of a physical body and a soul, an intellectual being. V'chelek ha'guf mushba rak me'advarim ha'nitfasim lo b'chush. If they're really two different tracks, two different parts of us, then the lave, the body, the real kishkas, the real feeling a person has in their gut, cannot come from intellectual knowledge. Ha'adam chafetz b'tzulumei krovav, on the last page. A person desires to have pictures of their loved ones. This is such an amazing mashal. Now we have them on our phones, in our backgrounds, on our laptops, our desktops. We have them on our physical desktops too. We have pictures of our families. Why? Who needs pictures of family members? Af shezochram b'lav hachi. Don't remember your child without it? Don't remember your parent without it? Whether they're living or passed on to the next world, don't remember your parent? You need a picture? Your child lives across the country, you don't remember them? It's not about not remembering them. Obviously, pictures can help us remember things that we don't. Oh, I forgot this person came to the party. I forgot we once went there. Fine. The details pictures can help with. But why do people have pictures of their loved ones? It's not because they don't remember them without the pictures. Mikamakom hatzelem hamuchash. The intellectual knowledge of what we have experienced or who we have seen is not as powerful as a physical reminder. It could be a picture, it could be a sefer we got from them, something that bequeathed to us a certain picture, memento, piece of jewelry, a garment, a talis passed down, a ring, the physical symbol that they once walked the earth, or they once lived here, or they once experienced this, or went there, or lived here. It's the physical reminders that, it's not that we don't remember them without it, but it takes it from the intellectual and makes it physical. I can touch it, I can feel it, I can see it, I can smell it. If the physical senses can pick it up, then it takes it from the brain and brings it to the heart. On the last line of this paragraph, he says, you can't envision someone right in front of you like you can when you have a physical picture or a physical image. He says, how much more so? We obviously all want to remember the people that we love. And even so, it helps so much to have a physical token, a physical picture, image, reminder of who they are and what they stood for. How much more so for deep intellectual, philosophical ideas that, as we mentioned in the past, the Russian may want to say, what is this? We don't want any of this stuff. It's much easier for us if we don't have to be bogged down by religious obligations. There's an idea, there's a bias in all of us to not want to remember that we're obligated to follow the mitzvahs. So how much more so for things like that are they not going to stick? Especially because he says, we never saw these things. Even people that we saw for so many years, it helps to have a physical representation of and symbolism of who and what they stood for. Certainly for things we don't want to remember, or things we never saw in the first place. How are we ever supposed to internalize and really live that? How are we supposed to be able to overcome any other desires? This is the last paragraph. This is what Chazal taught us. The best way to really learn. Not just to know or to think about intellectually in a book, but to live and to breathe. Understanding how human beings work. You want to make it real? You want to make it alive? You want to make it experiential? You have to have actions. You have to have physical representations. As much as you can to make them real and alive, that's what you have to do. That's the way to make it real and alive to your body. That's the way to make it real and alive to your neshama. The neshama thinks it knows and thinks it's able to understand, but it becomes real and alive when we have these symbols. And therefore, if we can act it out, we don't just tell the story. We use first-person language. Bavur ze, asa Hashem li. To me, to my family. If it wasn't for this, we would still be enslaved to Paro. Whatever we can, to walk around the table, to carry the matzah, to pick up the matzah, to use physical symbols. We can't tell the story without these symbols. We can fulfill zechiras yetzias mitzrayim every day and every night with just telling over the story intellectually in Kriyat Shema. But we can't fulfill sipur yetzias mitzrayim on Rosh Chodesh. And not even on Erev Pesach. It has to be on this night when there's a mitzvah of matzah, a mitzvah of mor, the same symbols that they used, we use again to make it alive. There's been a lot of studies about experiential learning. And people don't just learn by studying, but they learn by doing. Teaching, mentioned in the first half of this year, is an example of doing, because you have to make it real, you have to ask questions, you have to test someone else or test yourself. But whether it's music, can you imagine a person learning music by just reading a textbook? No way. You learn music by doing. There's some musical theory, that's wonderful. There's musical lectures, fine. There's musical observations. At some point, you got to just do. You got to open up the piano, and you got to take the guitar, and you got to just start playing. You don't learn music by just watching someone else do it, or by reading about it in a textbook. You need to do. You learn by doing. You learn by doing, by making it hands-on. The Seder is structured with these two tools of pedagogy. Number one, questions, and 1A, self-generated questions. Piquing curiosity to get people to have burning desires to know the answer. And number two, the Seder is very demonstrative. It's very hands-on. It's supposed to be very hands-on. Not just for the hands-on to the fork and knife, but hands-on to the tools, the props. Make it real. Dress up. Put on costumes. Walk around. If you're dealing with older people, maybe that doesn't register as well with the costumes and funny pictures. But again, tell over a story with a demonstration. Haggadahs with pictures in them and make it come alive more than ever before. If you can't tell over the whole story in 3 hours and don't have patience for that, pick one point. Study one thing. I want them to understand how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, Mida Keneged Mida. And therefore, I'm just going to talk about how two or three of the Makos were so carefully lined up to the ways in which they used to torture us. And make it real, use imagery, use pictures, or use the koach of words to be able to make it real and imagine what it's like to be going through. Oh, the frogs here, frogs there. Frogs screaming and jumping everywhere and making the house a torture. And what does the screaming represent? What do the frogs in the ovens represent? You can make the Makos come alive. Make everything come alive, not just in an intellectual way, but to bridge that gap between the head and the heart, to make it something that not only the head can understand, but the heart can understand. And that's something that applies to all ages. Whether a person is dealing with little kids, or older kids, or a person is by themselves. Like God said, you're supposed to ask yourself these questions, because it doesn't matter how smart or knowledgeable or how many times you've done this before. What matters is that the lev is an Am HaAretz, and it only can become real and meaningful if we have ways of making it alive, of really delving into it, using the imagination to imagine what it was like being there, either as a slave or during the Makos, Kriyas Yam Suf, to actually sit and envision it. 5 minutes spent envisioning Kriyas Yam Suf is much more meaningful than telling over the whole Haggadah. Because if you can actually truly imagine yourself in those situations, using your senses, what would the sea smell like right now? What does the mud feel like under my feet? Can you imagine the rushing sound or the screaming? If you actually use any of the five senses to imagine any point of the Shibud or the Makos or Kriyas Yam Suf, that's living the story. So hopefully, I'll take a question in a second, but hopefully that's something we can take to our Seder this year. Number one, this idea of self-generated questions. And number two, the idea of making it alive. Try using the five senses. Pick one part of the Haggadah, one part of the story, and use as many of the five senses as you can to say, what was it really like to be living through Makas Shechin? Or what was it like to be leaving Mitzrayim, accompanied with millions of other people, horses and children and screaming and matzah baking on my shoulder? Use the five senses to really make it come alive. Mirtz Hashem, if we can use these tools, we can have a super meaningful Haggadah Seder, which is not just a lesson for Pesach, but also to fundamentally inculcate within ourselves, bring it to the lev, these ideas that come from asking burning questions and providing demonstrative experiential answers. Yes.